Take your Bibles tonight and turn with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 14. I'm going to start a series tonight in the evening service on 1 Corinthians 14. We've spoken piecemeal from this passage before, but we've never really gone through it in an organized fashion. And what I want to deal with basically is how do we use biblical principles to make decisions about what we will and won't do in the church. So often people come to church and they see the decisions you've made. We decide, for instance, in a church like ours, I would like us to sing more choruses, but we sing more hymns than choruses. You see that a good portion of the service, over half of it, is spent on preaching. That's a choice the church has made. You see that the pulpit is in the center. You see that there are hymnals in the pews. You see several things that you might have taken as tradition, but they're really choices of a church, because if you go to other churches, you'll see things completely different. The question is, how does the church go about making those decisions? How do you, instead of saying, well, here is a verse in the Bible, therefore we do it, how do you say, I want to be able to make some decisions about some tough issues in the church? Why won't we worship that way? Why won't we do those things in the service? Well, 1 Corinthians 14 is a great passage to learn from. The early church had to make a decision. What would they do about tongues in the service? Now, let's start out with a clear understanding every single time. What people do today when they speak in tongues is not what was going on in Corinthians. So I'm not talking about the modern tongues movement. That's a misnomer. What people are doing today is not biblical tongues. In the Bible, a tongue was a real language. French, German, Spanish, Hindu, Taiwanese, Pig Latin, a real tongue, but the speaker didn't know that. He had never learned that language. That is a miracle. Trust me, I've learned enough languages. You would not believe it, but if I could have one gift in the Bible, I would want the gift of tongues. To be able to speak a language fluently without ever knowing it, man, what they have today is a really inky-dinky, bad imitation of tongues. It's a yabba-dabba-doo phenomena where you think I'm kidding. It is an emotional state, a real emotional state. It's not fake. That person is not faking it. They honestly believe that they're doing something out of their control. But the question is it tongues? Well, Bible tongues were known languages. Somebody else could say, okay, I speak Taiwanese, that's what it is. I speak this language. What happens is they have induced a mental state that causes them to speak in a language that has a rhythm and a pace of its own, but it is something they've made up out of their mind. And we know this because not only do people trying to imitate the biblical pattern do this, we have all kinds of different groups around the world. Native American Indians speak in tongues. The ancient Greek mystery cult spoke in this fake kind of tongue. So when this passage is talking about tongues, we're talking about, first of all, a gift that you have never seen and will never see. It is a miraculous speaking in a language that is a known language that you never learned. Second thing, it's a gift that has ceased to exist in our time. It does not happen today. It's not there. But it was real for them. It was a real choice for them. And they had to make a decision. What part of the service and how in our service do we use the gift of tongues? Now, you and I face similar choices. What should we sing? I went to a whole conference that was on what kind of music should we sing? What's the role of music? What should we read the Bible in public worship service? Should we stand at different times? How should we dress? These are real questions to us. Well, I'm proposing that as we look at the rules that they use for making a decision about tongues and the appropriateness of tongues, we will not just learn about tongues because it's a non-issue today. We don't have this gift around to talk about, but we can apply these same rules and principles to decisions of what we will do in our church. You follow me? We use this passage and say, how did they make a decision about tongues? What were the rules, the applications, the principles? And then we've got a hold of some principles for using when we make decisions along the same line. Usually the way church makes decisions, they get together and argue about it. And everybody says, this is what I like, or I don't like that new fashion stuff. You know, it happened after 1920, it can't be good. Or on the other hand, people say, I can't put up with that old fashioned stuff. Why, Good Night Nurse, that must have come out when, 1980? You know, let's get current here. You know, so people have tastes and they argue instead of using principles. So let's come to this passage and say, how did they make a decision on a very, very tough issue? Because these tongues were legitimate. They were four real things. The question is, how do I use them? Where do I use them? When is it appropriate? And the argument that's going on today concerning choruses and music and preaching and all kinds of other things, we're not talking about parts of the service that are illegitimate. They're all legitimate. We just need some principles to put them in their place. Let's start out. Chapter 14, verse 1. He says, pursue love, desire spiritual gifts, but especially that you may prophesy. I don't often do this, but you need to change a word in this verse. There is a word in this verse that is very misleading. Okay? Read chapter 12 and verse 31, and I'll show you where the same word is used and also misleading. But earnestly desire the best gifts, and yet I show you a more excellent way. It's that word desire. The problem with that word desire is that it is the Greek word Z-E-A-L, zeal, be zealous for. Okay? For instance, if you have a New King James Bible, read chapter 14 and verse 12. Here it's translated according to the original. Even so, since you are zealous for spiritual gifts, let it be for the edification of the church that you are zealous, is the actual word, to excel. One of the problems with the King James Bible is they'll take one Greek word and translate it by three English words. In that verse, the word zealous is the Greek word zealous. The word seek in chapter 14, verse 12 is also the word zealous. And the word desire is the word zealous. I propose that we translate it be zealous every single time. That being zealous means I want you to have a concern. I want you to have an active concern that seeks to promote something. When you're zealous to get something done, you not only desire it, but you're diligent to get it done. You're thoughtful to get it done. My class is learning about the party called the Zealots, Simon the Zealot. Those were people who had a tremendous zeal, a real loyalty to something. And what Paul is saying, let's start with Charles 31, is misunderstood because of the King James Bible. Earnestly desire the best gifts. The charismatic movement uses that to say, you've got to pray and ask God, please give me the gift. I don't have this gift. I want this gift. Give me the gift. And if you've ever been exposed to charismatics, they'll tell you to do that with tongues. Pray for the gift. Ask for the gift. That's not what the word is. First of all, he's talking to the entire congregation, not to individuals. He is not telling individuals, I want you individuals to seek and to ask for the best gifts. He's telling the church, as a church, I want you to be zealous, to defend, to be diligent that the best gifts are displayed within the church. His concern was that you people are out there and not only don't you understand that gifts are different, you're concentrating on the worst gifts. You're concentrating on the least important gifts. As a church, and this is in the plural, by the way, that's how we know he's addressing the church, be zealous for, have a real earnest diligent loyalty to the best gifts. That's his principle. There are different gifts for different purposes. He said all the gifts are legitimate. Tongues was legitimate. Prophecies are legitimate. All of the gifts that he talked about, teachers, so on and so forth. But he said, I really want you as a church to learn there are better gifts. There are more important gifts. There are gifts that take priority. And be zealous. Have a real desire to promote the better gifts. That's a principle for the church. That God gives different things and God gives different abilities
Today we would say God also gives different spiritual gifts to individuals, but the Bible doesn't necessarily teach that all of them are appropriate at all times, that all of them are necessarily as important as each other. We tend today in a democratic society to want to make everybody's job seem important, right? That job is really important because otherwise they won't do it if there's no importance. Well, the Bible does it the opposite. You're a servant. You don't need to find an important job to do. Just do it because it's there to be done. We want to make everybody think your job is so vital. Well, maybe, maybe not. All jobs need to be done, but in a church we have to have priorities. There are some jobs that are just more important than other jobs. Hey, when a baby needs to be changed, it's important that that baby be changed. Okay? On the other hand, what is more important to a church, that you get out there and preach the gospel or that you change the babies? Well, if you're weighing it in the lifetime of a church, you don't change that baby, you got a bad service. You don't give the gospel, you got a dead church. One slightly more important than the other. Okay, we need to be teaching the children the fundamentals of the faith. We need to be teaching our little children and our primary kids. But it's more important that we baptize believers. Baptizing believers is a fundamental issue in the church. Teaching the children is important. It's valid. It's necessary. But baptizing believers will have a much greater impact on your church than the little children who aren't members of your church. Baptizing believers is a command of Jesus Christ. So we're not talking about something that's unimportant and something that isn't. We're talking about two things that are important, but learning to say this is more important to the life of the church. This is more important for this particular aspect of the church. And that we're not trained to do. And Paul said there are gifts and they're all valid and you don't all have the same gifts and God gave you those gifts, but some are better. Verse 31, be zealous as a church, promote the best gifts. See the point? Think on those terms. Discernment. Then he says, and yet I show you a more excellent way. But there's something even more fundamental than discernment of the best gifts. There's something that's even more basic and more necessary. And in chapter 13, that is what? Love. He said, you're missing the point. You guys who are all into gifts and what I do, you're missing the point. Love is, and by the way, that's through the entire book. Love is key. The Corinthians love knowledge and they love gifts. They love being important. They just love knowing things. But they didn't have love for people. They love knowledge and they love themselves, but they didn't love people. Come back with me quickly. You know the passage, but I'll just turn there. Chapter 8 and verse 1. He makes the point. Now concerning the things offered to idols, we know that we all have knowledge. That is what we would call today sarcasm. We know we all know it all. You know, we know how much we all know. Knowledge puffs up, but love edifies. That's his problem. Yeah, you guys love the knowledge, but all it does is puff up. What I'm after is edification. That's going to be the same principle we see here. He said there's something more important, and that's love. And in chapter 14 and verse 1, he brings those two principles to bear. Pursue love, the basic building block. When you make a church decision, pursue love. Follow the way of love. It's got to be good for other people. Love, all of those rules that are in chapter 13 fit in making your decision as to what you should do in the church. How often when it comes to making decisions about what we should do in the service or what we should do in the ministry, do we haul out 1 Corinthians 13 as part of our decision? That's what he says. Pursue love and desire, that's that word be zealous for, the same word in verse 31, the spiritual gifts. Pursue love, have the right attitude towards the best spiritual gifts. Put those two together, and what's his application? But especially that you may prophesy. He says, I'm going to give you an example of the application of love together with the best spiritual gift. Those two principles, when you put them together, let's talk about the matter of prophecy.
What role should prophecy play in the church compared, for instance, to tongues? Up above, it's kind of obvious that tongues are not high on his lists of gifts. Notice when he lists the gifts down, he talks about verse 28. God has appointed these in the church. First, apostles. Second, prophets. Third, teachers. After that, miracles, gifts of healing, helps, administrations. What's the very last gift he mentions? Tongues. Tongues. The varieties of tongues. That's last on the list. So, how much discernment does it take when you're trying to make a decision between tongues and other gifts? Not much if you read that verse. Apparently the Corinthians needed this. Then when he talks about all of the different peoples and what they do, he starts in the same order. Above he said first apostles, then prophets. Notice in verse 29, same order. Are all apostles, are all prophets, are all teachers, are all workers of miracles? Do all have gifts of healing? Do all speak in tongues? Do all interpret? Those two go together. Last. Paul's saying, listen, if I had to give you an example of the least important of the gifts, it would be tongues. It's a valid gift. It has a place. But it's the least important. And then when he comes down here to, I'll give you an example. You got to make decisions here, guys. You got to get some discernment. Here are your two principles. Love, the best gifts. When you put those two principles together, let's talk about prophecy. There is what love would tell you is the best gift. If you apply the principle of love and say, how can love guide me in understanding what is the best gift? You'll come up with prophecy. And the rest of this chapter, all the way down through especially verse 25, is going to be, here is what happens, and here is how we know that prophecy is superior to tongues. And every one of these principles that we're going to see will bring together love and discernment over what's best. When you use love in this example as your base, let's make a discernment. Let's give you some examples. Point number one. He who speaks in a tongue does not speak to men, but to God, for no one understands him, even though in the spirit he speaks mysteries. Notice I changed however to even though. Helps you understand it a little bit better. Principle number one. Why is prophecy superior to tongues? How can you reach that conclusion? Because a person who speaks in tongues is talking to God and not talking to men, and the men don't understand. What's the priority in a service? That people understand. That's the priority. That's key here. He said, even though that person may be speaking some beautiful truths, even though that person speaking in tongue, in their case, it's a foreign tongue, let's call it Hindu, even though he's speaking beautiful truths in Hindu, it's not the content of what he's saying that's the problem. The key here is that love says it's important that you understand. Love says that it's not important. The basic fact is not just me talking to God and having a, used to say a gay old time after the Flintstones, but we say a great old time. And how many of you remember the Flintstones? We'll have a gay old, now it's a great old time. You know, I'm cautious on these matters, correct me if I, you can be doing all these things you want, he said, but the key here is when you apply that principle of love, hey, do I love my brother, and what is what I am doing for them? How is my approach helping them? How is what I am speaking actually causing them to understand? It isn't. There is nothing wrong with speaking to God. But in the service, he said, understanding is the key. Let's give you an example. When we were going to choose a pew Bible, okay, we had to make a decision. There are several good translations of the Bible. That is the basic teaching of our church. God didn't hand down the scriptures in one King James, boom, drop in front of you, and now it's here and don't ever change it or die. All right? God didn't do that, okay? So we had to make a decision, what version of the Bible will we use? Well, that's the same kind of decision. You know, I'm not saying one is great and one is terrible. How do we make that decision? One of the principles that was key in putting a Bible in your hand was, well, two that went together. It had to contain the truth without being twisted. There are many versions of the Bible that will twist the truth. That was important to us. But just as important, you had to be able to understand it. See the point? Understanding, love teaches that, hey, truth is important. That's what he says here. Even though he's speaking tremendous mysteries, great truth revealed. That's what a mystery is, truth revealed. A mystery isn't something that's like, who done it, or I don't know. A mystery is telling somebody a truth that they wouldn't have known otherwise. He said, truth is wonderful, but understanding is what love demands. When we were picking a Bible, we could have stayed with the King James Version. But the problem was that in the estimation of many of us, the truth was there, but it's hard to understand. The King James Bible is downright difficult to understand. You want some examples? Anybody have a King James Bible with them? A parallel. Oh, that'll be great. Let me read you one of my favorite verses in the King James. All right, that when people ask me about this, I say, okay, tell me what this means. James chapter 1, see if I can find it here. Okay, here we go. Wherefore, lay apart all filthiness and superfluity of naughtiness. What's superfluity of naughtiness? If you don't know, and you don't understand, it's not because God didn't give his word, it's because people understood this in the 1600s. This was their language. It was perfectly clear to them. We don't speak that language. Superfluity of naughtiness means the overflowing. Super is over. Fluidity is flowing. The overflowing of wickedness. Lay apart all that wickedness that kind of boils and flows over. All the excesses of wickedness, like the pot boiling over. But we don't use this. That's one reason why we didn't choose this. Okay? Because it's hard to understand. Is it possible to understand it? Yes. But why give you a Bible that somebody needs to interpret for you? One of the principles that we have in congregational church government is you have a Bible in your hand, and you can go to God on your own, and you study the Bible, and you bring your Bible. Why make you have a Bible that somebody like a pastor needs to interpret for you? You get a Bible that is straight and true, but that is understandable. I'm trying to tell you, thank you, that is the principle of 1 Corinthians 14:2. He says, listen, tongues are great. They're wonderful. And you can even present great truth, reveal great truth, but love demands that people understand you. What if people just don't understand what you're saying? Then we don't do it. Then we choose something that's better. See what I'm trying to say? Here's how you make these decisions. And when you're going to Bible versions, the decisions don't get any rockier or thornier or more personal than that. Why do we go to the King James? Because New King James, because those of us who have been raised on the King James just have a very, very difficult time transitioning into something that is absolutely new. Frankly, that's it. It's a good version of the Bible, and there are other good versions, but it is very hard to take a church, and take your pastor, who is about in the middle of the church. Carol's 90, I'm 44, so we got different things. I'm about in the middle of the church. If you and Mrs. Steiger are on this end, I'm in the middle, okay? It's very hard for us to transition from the King James Bible that we've always been taught into a version that doesn't look anything like that. So we went with the New King James. A new, more understandable version, but that at the same time had the ring, had the same phrases, was based on the same text. Our principle was based on this. You might not have thought of it at the time. Maybe we should have showed you this verse and when we did it. But when churches have to make decisions, they bring the love principle with seeking what's best. And when you're making decisions between two things that are both valid, between two gifts, tongues and prophecy, between two versions of the Bible, they're both valid. What makes the difference? Principle number one, understanding. Love demands that I seek something that people can understand. I want to be plain. I want to be clear. I want to be understood. Let me just make a couple more applications. That will apply to what we do in music. When we sing, when we have music, it is important that it is music that you can understand and that you can relate to. I'm not interested in music that is so technically perfect, but complex that the people don't understand it. Bless her heart, I had an organist at the church that I pastored for 15 years who started taking organ lessons, didn't know a thing about it, and she learned to play the organ, and that ain't easy. I mean, that shows diligence. But her organ teacher, by the third year, had her into Bach. We were getting Bach fugues for our offertory. You know, that was the Phantom of the Opera, you know, running around. I'm like, oh boy, I can't take this anymore. So finally, the pastor, I almost did it in the service, but God was gracious, said, no more of that. Why not? The people don't understand Bach fugues. You do. They're beautiful. But they don't understand it. That music doesn't relate to them. That's not music that lifts them up to God. That's music that's driving them into the restrooms. You know, are they over yet? You know, stop it. So that's the point. The music has to relate. And by the way, I would say the same thing is true when the church begins selecting choruses. Choruses relate very much to the younger generation. And I think that's where the church is going, and that's a valid form. But the choruses you choose for your morning worship have to be something that are understandable, that the older generation can also relate to. You can't just pick choruses, well, these people will love them. You can't pick hymns for that reason. The people have to understand how it works. There are some choruses that may be beautiful, but certain level of the congregation would say, I just don't get that. That doesn't really, I can't get involved with that. I don't understand it. I don't like the idea of any kind of music where the words become secondary to the instruments or to the melody line. We want understanding. Now, there's validity in having instruments play. That's understandable. People know what's going on. But when the music becomes so involved that the words are completely lost, you know, sometimes the Bible colleges will send out quartets. And the purpose is to see who can hit the highest high and the lowest bass. And that's not understandable. When we do music, do the people understand? Do they know what's going on? When you make a choice between two things, the principle is let the congregation be edified in understanding. All the way through here, we're going to see that understanding, knowing what's going on, is part of edification. We'll keep continuing this in the weeks to come, but let me transition to the Lord's Supper. This is one reason why every night when we have a communion service, I preach about something that has to do with the Lord's Supper. Because the principle is you have to understand what's going on. If you don't understand what we're doing, then you're not participating and you're not edified. I spent years growing up in the church, and I could literally go through the communion service with my eyes closed. I did it a couple times as a child, you know, and as a teen. But it meant nothing to me. And it was very real. The pastor perfectly understood. But I doubt very much if the people in the church really understood the significance of everything we were doing. They were fortunate if they understood the reason why we sing a hymn at the end is because Jesus and his disciples sang a hymn when they finished their service. They considered that great knowledge. I think it's important that you understand what we're doing in the Lord's Supper. That you're not simply a passive participant. That it's not a ceremony being enacted up front. You know what's happening. You have an awareness. You're worshiping God with your mind and your spirit both. And that's what this service is all about. That's the principle the Bible lays down. We make a choice about what we do here. By the way, churches do things different in the communion service. I'm joking. The first time I had a communion service with you men, we did things so different. I'd done them one way for 15 years. My way. And I come to the church, I think my first full Sunday here is communion service, and we were do-si-do-ing up here. I couldn't figure out, and the men all knew what they are doing, and I didn't know. I didn't get with the program that first Sunday, and it was probably pretty obvious. The question is, what do you know, and what do you understand? And when we're in this service, do you have an understanding? Or is it the clashing cymbal? Is it the uncertain trumpet? It's like, I know they're doing something, but I can't really tell you what it is. That's not edification. That's not love where the church and what the people are doing is important. And that's what we're after in this service tonight. That you understand that this is God's rule for everything in the church.
It's edification of the body, where the body understands and then the body grows and builds more understanding and growth. Kind of turns that.